I don't know about you, but every morning I wake up before coffee, before talking to anybody, before thinking about anything, I pick up my phone. I engage in the internet. I engage in the digital. I've been asking myself one question all year long. How does internet, our digital landscape, influence the things we do and change the way artists and makers interface with the world?
This is Script, a multi-platform art project that consists of a podcast, publication, and exhibition.
Hey guys, welcome back. This is episode 4 of Script. I've got a really great artist for us to listen to today. Her name's Sarah Hummel-Jones. Her primary practice is within the realm of ceramics. She graduated alongside me in 2014 from Cranbrook Academy of Art. So we'll talk a little bit about our experience there, including the infamous lounge. Her last exhibition was in 2018. It was titled, Do You Ever Come Home From Work With Your Feet Smelling Like Corn Chips? We'll talk a little bit about humor and how that plays a role in her work. That show was at Project Project in Omaha, Nebraska. She's a recent OCI-CS grant recipient, and she primarily works in clay using hand building and press mold techniques, but she creates objects that are often inspired by music videos, blipster culture, television, and movies. One more thing. We are in a working studio, and so sometimes you'll hear some working things happening, like sanding or painting or drilling even, or mixing, just so you guys know. So let's get started. I jump right in and we're talking about her practice, her process. Okay, let's give it a listen. Okay, so can you give us a little background on, you know, visually, what does your work look like? What kind of elements or materials do you use? What would we encounter if we walked into your studio or imagined your practice?
The work that I'm making a lot of recognizable objects. I often reference popular culture. Snack foods are a big hit in my making. And then with things that I see every day, whether that be in TV or online, even on like Instagram.
And that gets pushed into your process. And is it always, I mean, are you ever working outside of kind of ceramics as a material? Like, are you utilizing other things that, alongside the ceramic wares?
I mean, primarily for the last 2 or 3 years, it's been ceramics heavy. A few years ago, I was incorporating cardboard and silicone, but I think more recently, my ideas, I think, are, like, in my opinion, more successful when I make them in clay.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because silicone is so expensive, so I don't want to, like, take that risk if it doesn't turn out.
Yeah, and clay is super regenerative. You can just kind of put it back in the bag and reconstitute it and use it again.
Yeah. And I think recently I've been thinking maybe I should expand my materials because I've gotten so comfortable with this one. So then, you know, for example, I want to start screen printing just one-off things for myself. But then when I go to screen print, it's not as easy and I tend to get more frustrated where I'm like, mm-hmm. Well, I should just use this challenge and keep working at this process rather than security blanketing onto clay. There was a while I was collecting cardboard boxes, like an obscene amount. Anything from like the greasiest pizza box to just like, in my mind, what I thought was like the perfect shape. And then I would kind of like paper mache and manipulate it to look similar to like Charles West's work.
Yeah.
I would get halfway and be like, this is dumb. Throw it away. And I noticed that I'd been doing that for since my post-bac, which was 7 years ago. So I stopped.
Yeah. You're like, I'm going to work with the material that really makes sense to me, resonates with me, you know, and I know that I can manipulate it in the ways that I can envision.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us, describe to us the last piece that you made. What was the last thing you made?
So I make a lot of like smaller elements that then create a larger piece. So it's kind of hard to say what the last solid piece was that I made. I had a solo show last October, so I guess those pieces as a whole and finished work, I guess, would be like the last piece that I made, because it's, you know, taking those smaller elements and making a larger scale. And that was a lot of, you know, how I had mentioned recognizable objects from ceramic disco balls, fried eggs, pizza. I think I made some soft pretzels in that installation, hands, cookies. And then I paired it with random objects, just cut out solid slabs that were circular, square. Oh, lots of donuts too.
Yeah, you got those donuts going on.
Yeah. And then recently, you know, I've been making some of those items that I mentioned, like soft pretzels, but, you know, larger amounts, mm-hmm. and donuts as well. But then I've also been, for whatever reason, wanting to throw a lot more. I think it's because in the ceramic process, that's probably one of the things I'm not the strongest at. And it's a goal for me to be able to, I guess, teach someone on a beginner level, but then also like incorporate that into my portfolio and pairing that with the other pieces that I've been making.
Yeah. Is part of your goal in throwing too, maybe the process of throwing really is kind of about creating a sort of production, you know, that's you can continuously just produce and reproduce once you get good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that part of it? Is you want to create some sort of functional wear or some sort of like goods that you can produce over and over again as well on the wheel? Is that part of the reason why you're gravitating that direction?
Definitely. I'm just noticing that, you know, I have maybe like 5 to 10 specific wheel thrown objects that I'm in love with. But then every time I go into the studio and I'm like, all right, I want to make, you know, 3 of these today. I go in and I might make one. And then the wheel kind of like determines everything else that I make, which is fine. Like I just go with it. And a friend of mine mentioned, you just need to remember what your hands did when you made that piece. But I guess they have a mind of their own. So
yeah, totally.
That part of the goal is to go into production with those specific objects eventually.
Yeah, it's super hard to do, you know, to reproduce something you just made. You're like, hold on, where did I collar in or where did I pull it out? Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely hard.
Hey guys, in these next few clips, we're going to continue to talk with Sarah about her process, but we're going to talk about a day in her studio, what that looks like, and also a skill that's primary to her process. And I think it's really interesting to think about what skills are primary to people, because a lot of these artists that have come on that I've interviewed really talk about a process being more than just the generative format, you know, the more than just actually the creation of the work in that solitary moment. And it expands beyond that. We've had some artists who talk about listening being their best attribute, their primary skill. We talk about others who recognize or understand when the moment is to stop making, or when that moment is where that project or that process is really generating really good content. So let's listen to Sarah and see what she has to say about those things.
Okay, tell us about a skill that is primary to your process. And this could be a physical skill that you have, a mental skill, any type of skill.
I think that would be editing and then like arranging / organizing the work for installation. Because I'm often, you know, cranking out pieces with maybe an end result in mind, but I don't really know what it's going to look like until I'm physically in the space where the show is happening or the installation is going to live permanently. And then I arrange and organize the work on the floor. Mm-hmm. You know, I like tape out a section on the floor and lay stuff out really intuitively. And then one thing that I do not have a skill is hanging the work then on the wall.
Yeah.
So Davey, my partner, is really great at that. So I'll arrange everything. And then he's really quick at, you know, making what it looks like on the floor exactly onto the wall when I'm finished.
Yeah. But I mean, it's funny because I really relate to that, because I think in my photographic process, the thing that I'm probably best at is that sort of arrangement and that sort of intuitive movement of like what objects go together in order to create this thing. And I can't really describe the process, but I know where things go and how they should look.
Right.
But yeah, that's totally a good skill to have, you know, because you make all these things. I mean, I feel like you're just always, you get these braids going on, you get these things, and then somehow you just pull it in together and really make this beautiful arrangement of objects.
Yeah, almost kind of, I guess, when I'm making them and then when I'm arranging them, I'm thinking of it. And, you know, it's not like an immersive installation by any means, but I'm thinking of it in terms of like its own little world, whether that be a whole wall installation or just like a small shelf with objects. And I recently had a friend who was, whoa, you've made so many of these and these. It would be awesome if you, you know, found a space to have a show, brought all of these elements, and then invited specific people to then come in and arrange the work. And I think that he could see on my face that I was like, no. I mean, well, I think that's a good idea, maybe to get me out of my comfort zone. Arranging the work is a large part of the piece in the end, and then like the process itself. So allowing for someone else to do that kind of takes away meaning, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, you know, I think maybe especially when you're making disparate objects, when you're able to put them together, you're able to actually sit back and reflect on what's happened, you know, like when that time is kind of compressed and you're able to bring things together, maybe gives you more vision on the direction you're going or the ideas that we're kind of formulating and how those objects are speaking to each other, for sure. Yeah. Okay. So I kind of asked you a little bit about this, but can you tell me or us how you generate or start a project? Like, what is the beginning? Like, how does the flame start? And then you start on something.
I think sometimes I have a hard time answering this question because it seems like, I think in my personal opinion, I assume other artists just have all these massive plans, but a lot of the time forms will just pop into my head for whatever reason that I can't stop thinking about. And then I start drawing those shapes on paper. And, you know, I might just draw the same thing over and over again, or I might draw the same object in different stages or, you know, slightly different variations. And then once I've drawn on the paper so much, I start feeling kind of claustrophobic. And then I'm like, all right, it's time to like make this stuff three-dimensionally. And then, you know, as I'm making it, I'll kind of reference those drawings, or I'll just kind of go with how I'm feeling, and it might reflect those drawings or be slightly different. And then sometimes I'll just do like a really quick sketch just so I don't forget about it, because that often happens. Once I've just quickly drawn it down, I might just jump into making it rather than drawing it out over and over again.
Yeah. Do you find that you have a really easy time translating that drawn thing into the physical thing? Like, is that easy for you, or do you feel like it changes somehow when you start actually making it with your hands?
I think it's an easy transition. I think when it's complicated is if, you know, I come up with an idea and maybe technically when I'm making it, it's like falling apart or it doesn't look how I want it to look. Or in my studio, I often work really, really fast because my short attention span. And if it's something I've drawn and then I'm making it and I'm like, this is taking more time than I feel comfortable with, I might just scrap the whole thing or stop halfway through and then move on to something else.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Okay. You know, that's funny because it's kind of reflective to, you know, our contemporary time. There's a sort of attention span of even images that we look at or objects that we move through, and we kind of move through at this rapid pace. So it's interesting because you're using things from popular culture of today, and then it's the process also has to be kind of rapid and have to be really quick in the making process. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I just sometimes I'll make work that I have to go back to, you know, maybe like the next day or the day after that and just add like small details. But when I'm making in the studio, I try to start and finish a work within like that same amount of time.
Whoosh. I wish. I'm like, why am I spending so much time on this thing that I'm going to throw away? You know,
I mean, I really admire people who spend time, you know, like on a piece. I don't know why sometimes I'll have a couple pieces that I'm like, this is my spending time piece.
Yeah.
And I'll go back to it, you know, 10 minutes for months. And then after a while, I'm like, this is boring. And I throw it away.
I think that's really refreshing, honestly, because, you know, a lot of the times in my own work, like the pieces that are really successful are the ones that I don't really labor over. You know, I in my practice, I usually have to go through this laborious process where I make something that really is terrible. And then somehow I'm like, oh, this generated all these ideas to make this thing that's really quick that actually is really great. But, you know, I'll go through that process of then I'll be like, oh, I'm going to throw this plaster mold away or this thing away. So I think that's pretty refreshing, actually.
My partner, I mean, he makes shoes, but he also paints. And he was making these paintings. I mean, I still think he considers them unfinished, but making these paintings, he would work on them for, you know, 3 to 5 hours a day for months at a time. And
that's layers, a long process.
Layers and layers, which I think is awesome, but I'm just, oh, that looks great. And he's like, no, I'm not done. It still needs this and this and this. And I'm just like, okay.
You're like, when are you stopping?
Yeah, sometimes I wish I could work like that, but I get distracted easily.
You're like, I'm on to the next thing. Check. Yeah. Okay, so in your studio then, how much time is, and this is, you know, I guess this question is pretty open-ended, but how much time is spent researching versus your production, your actual making?
Not that much time. I guess when I think of research in terms of my process, it's usually like the drawing that I talked about, or like randomly browsing the internet from anything from food pictures to, I love shopping, but I'm trying not to. So like fashion inspired stuff, and that might not reflect in my work, but I take a lot of joy looking at that stuff. And then sometimes I just end up looking at like pictures of trash or like greasy wrappers. But I think that's the furthest extent of the research within my process. There's so much that happens.
It's a lot of production and like learning through making the things themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Sarah, take us through a day in your studio. What does it look like?
I often have a checklist of like items that I'm going to make during that time that I'm in the studio. And usually I try to gauge the items that I'm making and the amount that I'm making based on like how much time I have or how much time I kind of want to be in the studio that day. And creating these lists really helped me be productive and like stay focused. I often tell people that I have the attention span of a hamster because it's true. So yeah, more often than not, I create a list when I go in. And, you know, sometimes I'll steer away from that list or other things will come up and I'll just go with it. But yeah, most of the time I'm in there with a list. I'm just like a pretty organized and retentive person in general. So that just helps. And then more often than not, when I get into the studio, I'll like clean and rearrange stuff for, you know, 10 to 15 minutes. And then before I leave, I clean as well, which also kind of like helps me stay productive.
How do you come up with the list? Like, you know, you're talking about you come in with a list. How do you generate that list to start with?
I think it's usually the objects that I'm constantly thinking about and or like objects that, you know, I really enjoy seeing in the final product or maybe other people would want to have for themselves. So I'll add those to the list. Like right now I'm making these braid pieces and I want like a variety of sizes and forms. So I know that I'm going in making these braid pieces, but then rather than saying, oh, I'm going to make 10 12 inch ones, I'll just say I'm going to make 10 total. The sizes can vary and then I go from there. But usually when I decide on what I'm making, it's just kind of like what I'm feeling in that moment.
Yeah. All right, we're going to switch gears a little bit, and I'm going to start asking some questions that are related to professional practice. This section's really important to me because as a working artist, I think you start to learn things really slowly. There's not a lot of information given when you're at school, when you're thinking about being an artist, and a lot of that information is left out, and I find the most valuable information is accessed through the people we meet and the experiences we have while working as an artist. All right, I'm going to feed you guys right in. Okay, so some practical advice. Can you give us something that maybe you've learned over time that you were surprised by as a working artist? You know, was there a big kind of reveal of something that you didn't realize maybe within an art practice?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing I've learned is any time that I have to make work is enough time. Being in grad school, you know, the program that I was at, or we both were at, it's, you know, all day, every day, rather than like having to go to class and disrupt your process. But then after leaving grad school, it was like, well, now what do I do? Like, I'm working jobs. I don't have all day to just sit in the studio and figure out the next move to make. So now I tried to realize, and maybe this is also in part why I work so quickly, is if I have 20 minutes, that's enough time. If I have 8 hours, that's enough time. I usually don't work in my studio for longer than a couple hours at a time. I often will, you know, make stuff really quickly and then go do something else. And then I might like go back and poke at something and then go do something else. So yeah, I guess I'm just like working with the time that I have.
Yeah. Yeah. You do become really appreciative of the time that you were afforded and then realize like, yeah, you just got to make it work. You know,
when I moved to New York after grad school, I was working at a ceramic school part-time and then was also a technician for someone. And I had a studio space where I was living, but I'd often make work at the ceramic school because I got free material. So commuting was crazy and I'd get to work an hour early. So I'd have an hour to make and then I would get an hour lunch break and, you know, I would work during that hour too. So I was just trying to make as much work as I could within those 2 hours every day. And I actually accumulated a lot of work. I think another thing is, and this is just me personally, I get that not everyone works this way, but I think another thing that I realized is that I have to make a lot of work to really be happy with the final installation of a piece. If I've only made, you know, 3 items and like one thing goes up, I'm probably not going to be as happy as if I were to have made 120 go up.
Yeah. So is there a lot we don't see then in your practice that just gets kind of shelved away?
Wow.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah. That show I had in October, I made hundreds of pieces. And I mean, a couple hundred went up, but I remember leaving the final install and still having 6 boxes filled with work.
Wow. So to expand on that, do you have anything else that you think would be something that we could take away about a practice, something that you've learned?
Yeah, I think it's good to kind of have at least a dose of a mental state that, you know, you shouldn't think too hard about what you're making, at least during the process. That's kind of what I try to do. You know, I'm consciously thinking about stuff that I want the work to maybe reference, but I often feel like personally, when I think about stuff too much, that's when I get jammed up and am not producing. And, you know, even sometimes with my close friends who are also artists, they'll say, well, I don't know what to make, or I'm not making anything. I don't know what to do. Or I start making this thing and I'm like, it's stupid. And it's like, just stop thinking so much about it and just do it.
Totally.
I heard this. Have you ever seen that documentary Meet the Woodmans about Betty Woodman and her daughter, Francesca, the photographer?
Oh yeah, I have seen that.
I liked a part in that documentary where I can't remember what her husband's name is. He's a painter. He was saying how important it was for them to go to the studio every day. Even when they didn't know what to do, he would just go to the studio and sharpen pencils until something fell out of the sky. And he was like, okay, I'll start painting that. So I guess in a sense, you know, don't think too hard, sharpen pencils and like something will come up eventually.
Yeah, totally. You know, it's so funny. A friend of mine invited me to this bronze pour at a staff bronze pour. And I was like, I don't know. I don't work in bronze. I don't work in any kind of traditional media. Like, how is this going to fit within my practice? And I was like, you know what? What is it going to hurt? And so I went in. We made these like wax casts. I decided to, of course, make bananas out of bronze, because why not? You know, like that just seems like really oppositional as far as what could you cast in bronze. It feels very something that you would throw away and not really concern yourself with.
I would love to do that.
What was so crazy is I'm making this thing, I'm working with the wax, I'm really getting frustrated because wax is, it's actually like this really hard process, like super difficult. A lot of steps involved. It's not just mold making. It's then making it out of wax. And then I didn't want to pay for a bunch of bronze. So I filled all the bananas with a Ludo mixture. But while I was doing those steps, I started making the investment mold. And the investment mold is made with sand, plaster, and Ludo, which is basically other bronze casts that they break apart the mold. They end up grinding that mold stuff back down. And then they can use it for future molds. And so I mixed that stuff together and I just became obsessed with this mix of plaster, sand, and Ludo. It's like the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. It kind of falls apart. It looks like paper almost in its texture and quality. It's got this gray coloration to it that I'm like in love with. And so what's so funny is I was like super resistant to this process. And then I started making just a part of the process that then I'm totally going to take back in my studio and make. And it's kind of like sharpening pencils. You know, I just got in there and made something. I didn't know what it was going to be or whether I even would care about it in the end. And something from that process I took away and was like, yes, this is going to feed into, you know, these shapes, you know, even.
That's awesome. Now I'm curious about that material. I'll have to look it up.
Man, you'll see it when you come visit. I got some in my studio going right now. Okay. I'm so excited.
Hey guys, you're listening to episode 4 of Script, and we're talking with Sarah Hummel-Jones about her practice. In this next section, I'm asking Sarah how she sifts through opportunities. And I know as artists, a lot of the process is getting into the studio. A lot of it is about making. And that's the process that most of us appreciate the most. But what do you do once it's out there? Where do you sift your opportunities? Like, where do you decide to have it be seen? And so we're going to talk a little bit about how Sarah sifts through her opportunities and when she decides to take one and when she decides to leave it alone. All right, I'm going to feed you right back in.
I had a question about how you sift through opportunities. Like when you're looking for an opportunity to, you know, maybe it's a residency or a show you're interested in, and what really kind of are the factors in deciding what that next opportunity will be?
So while I'd love to participate in residencies, I feel like my lifestyle right now doesn't really, I guess, afford to do that.
Allow you to take up?
Yeah. I mean, I work full time because I've got bills, but you know, I might see something and say, oh, I'll apply to that. So my partner wants to go to grad school within the next year. So I'm like looking at opportunities that way. And, you know, maybe I can't apply to this round, but I kind of have like a running list that then I just copy and paste that link or the title of that residency into a Word document that I can either apply to when that time comes for us to move and or in the future. And then in terms of open calls for shows, I used to Google search artist opportunities a lot, but I found that a lot of them were really themed and I wasn't making work within those themes and I wasn't about to make work to try to apply to that show that then I probably wouldn't get into. And that's a bad attitude, but I feel like that was
a
just
bad attitude. No, it's totally true. I mean, there's still these really kind of archaic systems that some open calls follow by, which is like, is it sculpture? Is it a still life? Is it this? Is it that? And you're like, who fits into those models anymore? You know, like, what are you looking for in that? Yeah, in that regard. So I totally.
And other artists around Omaha will ask me about shows and I'll say, I mean, you can Google it, but I mean, your work might not fit into like the spooky theme or whatever. And fortunately, since I've moved to Omaha, I did a couple of outreaches to galleries / like alternative gallery spaces. But then also, if I do see like a call for entry, I might apply if the submission fee isn't more than $20. But fortunately, I've been asked to participate in shows quite a bit here. I guess the way that I gauge if I'm going to do that or not is if it works out. Time-wise, you know, if I have to pay money to show, I'm probably not going to do it. And then, you know, more often than not, I say yes. But if I just feel like if it's not a good time or I'm not really interested, I just gratefully decline. And it's hard saying no to people, but you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't drive yourself crazy trying to do everything. And a lot of those opportunities sometimes, I don't know. I did a show. I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus, but I did a show a couple years ago and it wasn't well publicized. It wasn't well really promoted. And so I did all this work, like really a ton of work to have like a few people show up at the opening. And I'm like, I guess it exists on the internet, you know, like this, you know, 6 months of work here, you know? Well, so I think, you know, it really made me kind of think like, oh, I got to be really careful about, you know, what opportunities I'm choosing. And is it an equal partnership? You know, am I putting in all this effort in order for somebody to also put an effort on their end in order to do the things that it takes to get a show you know, all the traction it can get, you know, because to me, there's a process of putting the work in and wow, just this relief. And then also like, I don't know, it's a little sad. And, you know, it's just like this down spiral a little bit because it's just such an output to just have this moment that it happens within and then it's over, you know? Yeah.
I participated in a couple of shows last year where, you know, like you said, putting in months of work, especially working in clay, I really have to plan ahead of time. You know, I try to be finished 2 weeks before the opening, which never happens, but I do my best. And then, you know, when it comes to install, then you realize, well, people are only going to see the work really this one time, because more often than not, the spaces are, you know, they have an opening. They might have a closing if the artist and the organizers decide to, but otherwise it's like appointment only. And I feel like, you know, a lot of people aren't making appointments. It's either they're going to go to the opening or they're not going to see the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm grateful for those opportunities, but then it's just kind of, oh, all that time.
It's only all my time and my energy and my effort.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm reading I forget the name of the book. I wish I had it in front of me, but it's about the labor of an artist and kind of like it's one of the only professions where we're expected to do all of these things at our cost and with all of our time and all of our energy and all of our effort. And we're supposed to like willingly give all that energy out and for very little return, if not any return. If any return. So, you know, it's just talking about how strange that relationship is versus like other economies and other ways people generate not just money, but, you know, their living, what they decide to invest their time within, you know, that it's not just monetary based, but it's just also recognition, all these other things. It's pretty interesting. You know, breaking that down.
You'll have to give me the title of that book because that sounds good.
Yeah, I'll find it.
Hey guys, again, episode 4, script, we're talking with Sarah Hummel-Jones. In this last clip, we talk about books, we talk about music, we talk about what's on the horizon and what we can look forward to in the future from the artists we speak to. So I'm going to go ahead and have you guys hop into that. We're going to listen to those last clips and stay tuned because I've got some really incredible things to announce at the end of this podcast. All right.
Okay, so Sarah, what can't you stop thinking about?
In general or art making?
You can go wherever you want to go.
Please. So I'll do art making and then I'll do in general. The reason I can't stop thinking about production design, you know, coming up with 20 prototypes of sculptural, but also interior decorative objects, and then producing those in like larger quantities for people to bring into the home. And then I also can't stop thinking about throwing on the wheel in sense of like a production mode. And I think I keep thinking about it because I'm not the best at it. So it's something I just kind of want to be doing all of the time so I can get better. And then in general, probably my puppy and food.
You're like, check, check, check. In what order are those things?
Food, puppy. Wheel throwing production design.
All right. All right. I like that. We gotta turn the tables a little, you know?
Yeah.
Have like some of those other things in the forefront. Okay. Give us, what do you listen to in the studio?
I listen to a lot of the Gorillaz. That's my favorite band. Kendrick Lamar. Pretty much like any rap and hip hop that you hear on the radio. I don't really like Post Malone though. And, you know, just like anything that I can sing and dance to in my studio. And then there's just one thing that I have to say, and that's RIP Lounge. You know what I'm talking about. Other people might not, but I feel like it's really important for me to have a studio space where I can just like sing really, really loud. And then in moments I'll like dance too.
Yeah. Lounge was this really grungy, amazing space where if you got in a fight with somebody in crit, or you had a really hard crit, or you might hate a few people in your department at our graduate school, Cranbrook, or maybe you love everybody, it doesn't really matter. You take all that emotion, that raw emotion, and you bring it to this really grungy, dirty place that's in this amazing like facility, like Cranbrook. If you walk the grounds, they're just, everything's idyllic except for lounge. Lounge is just this place where you take out all that aggression with loud music and karaoke and singing and dancing. And just, I think it was one of the best components to that school.
Had like,
you just got to release. Yeah. It allowed people not to kill each other. I really feel that. You'd go to lounge and you'd be like, you're okay. I don't mind you at all. Like, actually, why are we fighting? You know?
That's funny. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. I mean, especially after a crit, I feel like it was one of those things like, whoosh, okay, now we're not in art mode. We can not think about those things. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay. RIP lounge. I know.
RIP lounge.
Okay. What books or writing influence your work? You got anything for us?
So to be honest, and you know, I'm proud of this, but also not in terms of my teacher brain, but I don't read a whole lot. You know, sometimes I'll read interviews of artists that I really like, or maybe I'm inspired by their work just aesthetically. And then I also love YouTube. I'll watch music videos all day long on YouTube. And then I also really enjoy Art21's page, especially like their New York close-ups.
Yeah.
Kind of goes into like studio practices of artists living in New York. But other than that, that's pretty much it.
I mean, that, no shame in that. I a lot of my content is podcasts. You know, like I just, because it's easy, because I can do it. It's like thing that I can do while I'm continuously working. So it only takes a certain amount of attention. And then also YouTube videos, I go crazy. Any instructional videos, anything about practice, I do that same stuff because I can parse it out and work while I'm doing that thing and combine that time. And I think with the shortness of time, it's really hard to find the time to kind of like sit down, designate this whole other time to this thing, you know?
Do you listen to art-related podcasts or just any type?
All different types.
Okay.
Some art-related. It's hard to find, actually, good art-related podcasts. I listen to this pretty hokey. I shouldn't even say this, but I listen to this hokey podcast called The Potter's Cast. And I...
I think you told me about that or someone else was telling me about that. And I was like, I should listen to it.
It's, you know, it's actually pretty informative. I think he thinks a lot about professional practice in a different way than I think about professional practice. So I think it's really good to think about. But, you know, they have some amazing artists on the podcast. So, you know, it's just interesting, especially because I don't come from the field of ceramics. I just want to know more.
I'm looking it up and I'm going to subscribe so I can listen to them.
You might hate it. I don't know. Tell me what you think.
I can roll my eyes, but I'll give it a shot.
I also listen to a lot of murder mystery podcasts, you know.
I love murder mysteries.
Oh, man, it's a problem. I can't get over it. I don't know why. I just want to know more. Like, every time I run out of one, I have to find another one. I have a good studio mate that gives me all the good ones.
I'm a big scaredy cat, so it's not helpful, but it's entertainment.
Yeah, it's bad when you can't leave your studio after you've listened to too many. I'm like, Russ, can you come pick me up? I don't want to go outside. Yeah. Okay. One last question. What direction are you headed now? Anything on the horizon?
I think right now, just like the objects I'm thinking about making tend to be more geared towards interior design and like multiples within like those specific objects. And then that along with like elements of humor. I find that humor and laughing are really important to me within my art and my life. So that's something that I'm going to try to hold on to for as long as I can within my practice and the work that I make.
Yeah, totally. Totally. That's awesome. Okay. Thank you so much for talking with us, Sarah. That was really informative and amazing. And I can't wait for people to hear.
Thanks for talking with me. I had a lot of fun.
If you want to know more about Script, please visit our website at www.digitalexhibition.space. Our podcasts are up there. I'll have information on not only the music that's being referenced, but the stories and the books, as well as the artist's practice and their websites, will all be up on that digitalexhibition.space website. So check that out. Also, guys, follow us on Instagram at Script Exhibition. If you guys have questions, if you want specific answers from artists working today, go ahead and just comment in some of our photos on the Instagram, and then I'll try to get those questions answered. So I kind of have a special announcement. I have a special release of a podcast episode happening tomorrow morning on Saturday morning. And it's following an exhibition that's actually out there, able to be seen at Carnation Contemporary in Portland, Oregon. So if you're in the Portland area and you want to go see some really amazing artistic work, you got to check out Carnation Contemporary. It's open for 2 more days. And I want to just say that this podcast episode was incredibly enlightening. We talk about issues like global climate change and how it factors into their practice. Artist M. Acuff is just an amazing artist, and I highly recommend seeing the work while it's still up. Again, 2 more days at Carnation Contemporary in Portland, Oregon. So be on the lookout for that. Oh, and another thing. Hey, we've got workshops coming up. Each one of these artists that are on the podcast, each one of them will host their very own workshop. They're going to show us a skill. They're going to bring some part of their practice into this workshop, and all the workshops are free and open to the public. Spots will be limited. So as soon as I drop that info, go ahead and sign up for a slot, and you'll be able to come and check out the artist's work and visit their workshop. So be on the lookout for that. All right. Thanks again. My name is Brittany Conley. See you guys next week.